Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
Hello and good Thursday to you. Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast. James Sharman here, as always, alongside Sportsnet.ca's chief football writer, John Molinaro. As the European season winds down, we'll get to what's happening in the Champions League and the Premier League later in today's show, JMO. But to start with, we're going to start domestically. As everyone knows, there's a very good chance that in 2026, Canada will be hosting 10 World Cup games. Assuming the bid goes the right way, we assume it will. Maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but we've got a few years to stress about it. But lots of questions being asked about what will Canada look like in 2026 on the football field.
Right.
Not off it. I mean, we could be a glowing, burning rubble by that point, the way things are going south of the border. But assuming we're still here, what will the Canadian national football team look like? So who better to talk to about this than the man in charge of the current under-17s, one of the great Canadian players, a man that I almost broke his leg in a charity match many years ago, is Paul Stoltieri. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. How's everyone? Good?
Good, thanks. Yeah, and you may not remember, as a clumsy challenge at a Julian de Guzman charity match, and I'm not sure what year it was, you were still playing, and it was a clumsy challenge, and you went down, and you got angry at me, and I don't blame you at all. It was a bad one. I do apologize, mate. I do apologize. All these years later.
Not a problem. No problem.
So your team, the under-17s, are just coming off the CONCACAF Championship, where you went out in the group phase, but you had a narrow defeat to a very good Costa Rica team, a narrow defeat to Cuba. You beat Suriname. There is obviously some quality at that level. What have you learned about your current group of players through that tournament?
Well, I've got to know them very well in the last couple of years. We've had them since the ID camps and at the U15 level. So it is a group of players coming out born in 2000 where the quality is there. There's a number of players that have the potential to not only one day play for probably maybe the under-20s, the Olympic team, but even hopefully into the senior team, which you don't often see too often, that many players coming out from the under-17 teams representing the senior team. For some reason or another, that just the statistics are there that don't correlate to a number of them coming out and playing with the senior team. But when you look back at this group and we understand that results are one thing, we're not really speaking about that at this particular moment when I'm talking about individual players, but there are a few there that definitely have the ability to hopefully one day represent the senior team.
Paul, obviously, a disappointment going out in the group stage, but can you talk about, some of the positives that you saw from the team over the course of the three games at the CONCACAF Championships?
Yeah, obviously, going out is a massive disappointment. The results, losing the first two games, where, like you said, if we speak about the performance, we were there in both games. There's no doubt that we could have even come away with a point, if not for the last second against Costa Rica. And I think we were even on the front foot in that game. We were trailing 1-0, managed to come out the blocks in the second half and had a really good 30, 40 minutes there before we get our center back sent off. And I think we were on the front foot at that moment. We looked a fitter team. We looked a stronger team. And I think we had Costa Rica on the ropes. And I think if there was, at that moment in time, if there was any team that was going to get the winner, it would have been us. But when we go down to 10 men in that kind of weather, in that kind of situation, you're just trying to hold on and get a point. And unfortunately, 5 or 10 seconds earlier, the game would have been finished and we would have got that. But the performance was very good in that match. I think we were a little bit slow coming out of the gates against Cuba. We weren't as sharp, and we found ourselves down 2-0, and that really hurt us as we weren't able to claw back. We definitely created a number of chances against Cuba. We weren't able to finish and convert on those chances. And then, like I said to the boys at halftime, we can't afford to go down 2-0 against them. Even a point would have been enough for us to advance, but that second goal in the end hurt us. And even in saying that, we still created a number of chances, and the boys battled the full 90 minutes in that kind of a heat and the conditions that we were in. Forced to play in is never easy, but up until the last kick of the game, we were there. We almost we almost could have, well, we should have been able to get a point against them. But, you know, I think in terms of the performance, the performances in all three matches were very good. Unfortunately, the results weren't there, and that we can't make excuses for that. We just, we weren't good enough on the day against Cuba to come away with a victory against them or even a point.
How much do how much do results matter at this point, Paul? Because I mean, obviously, you know, you're talking about, you know, youth players, and the key part of all this is, you know, you're trying to develop them for the future, and that's great, but. You know, where do results come into play in this? How much of an emphasis do you put on that? And should sort of fans expect more from a Canadian U-17 team?
Well, we're always looking to. Our main goal is definitely development, but along with development comes matches. So it's almost a two-fold. If you end up qualifying and or even getting past your group phase, you guarantee yourself another two international games. You qualify for the World Cup, you guarantee yourself another 6 months of these players being involved in camps, playing international games, and obviously competing at the highest level in the U-17 World Cup. So they go together, the results go together with development, because without the results, your games are limited. You don't have that many more opportunities to play as a group and give these kids the experience. I mean, our main goal is definitely to have these kids playing 20, 25 international matches at the youth level before they even represent Canada at the senior level. So in doing that, and the only really able way to do that is being able to qualify for World Cups, and that extends the age group, and that extends camps, that gives them more opportunities to play not only friendly internationals, but also meaningful matches in a World Cup. So they kind of go together, if that answers your question.
Yeah. But to the second question, though, but should we have expected more, or was this, like, how big of a letdown? Obviously, it was a letdown, but should we have expected more?
There was a few things came into play with this group. I think the group, without a doubt, if the fans had watched the first game, they would have thought, you know, this team's got real potential. It's got some good players, and even in saying that, we're missing, you know, we lose one of our players at halftime, one of our best midfielders in Michael at halftime, and then we're short on the left side of the pitch through injuries. We were missing, by the end of the tournament, we're missing probably five or six players who would very easily be in our starting 11. So disappointing, yes, because I think that the team had potential. If we were at full strength the entire tournament, there's no doubt about it that I think we had enough potential to definitely challenge the likes of Honduras or even Panama or Costa Rica for that third or fourth spot in the qualification. I think Mexico and the U.S. were definitely the two of the top teams in the competition. But there's no doubt that I'm convinced that, which is the unfortunate part, is had we had the full team in full fitness and ready to go and all the players available for full selection, I think we would have been able to really push and qualify. But with the group that we had, you know, I still think, with one or two things go our way, we would have been able to at least get into that round and play a one-off against Honduras. And then you never know. You're able to play them and probably qualify. So to answer that question in a long way and now in a short way, I think, yeah, it's still a disappointment for us not being able to at least put ourselves in that position against the likes of Honduras in a one-off to qualify.
We're talking to Canada's under-17 head coach, Paul Stalteri. Paul, you know, 9 years from the World Cup in 2026, you know, assuming Canada gets the bitter course, there'd be a lot of hype building up to that tournament. I know your players are still very, very young. It's hard to guess who's going to make it. Obviously, it's a big couple of years for a lot of these players. You know, will they make it or not? You've seen these kids in professional setups, in professional teams, in MLS. Are you seeing, is it great hope for you that we are finally now in the right direction in Canadian soccer, or is there still a lot of work to do?
Well, there's always work to do. I think it's you can always improve, and you can always improve your pool of players. I think the biggest thing for us is now We definitely have some good talented players coming through the ranks at different age levels. I think the number of players and the pool of players needs to expand, and we need to get that pool of players bigger and in terms of quality and numbers leading forward. And like I said, it's very difficult to predict a 15 or 16 year old kid at the under 17 level or 17 year old kid at that matter to predict where he's going to be in 8 or 9 years. And you hope that you're right on the number of them and they're able to one day represent the senior team, and hopefully they're in, like, this age would be in a prime age once that World Cup rolled around. They'd be right around their mid-20s. So that would be a perfect age for them. I definitely see 4, 5, 6 of these players with the potential to do that. But again, in the next 2, 3 years is very important for their development to see if they're able to take that next step and get themselves into the all-important aspect of playing first-team football on a regular basis.
Paul, how did you find the experience of just taking charge of the U17 over the last 2 years? What was the group like, and what were some of the challenges that you faced?
It was a great experience, no doubt about it. I've been involved for a number of years now with the setup in the PSA and youth teams, and getting experience from different angles, whether that be with the U20s or the U15s or even the senior team for that matter. But being in charge of one team and making the decisions on that is something different, and it was a good experience. And I think getting to know the players and getting to know this group of players at this level, and it was something very eye-opening. Great to have a relationship with all their different clubs, professional clubs, in the academies throughout our country. And even working with one or two of the professional clubs overseas where players came out of, that aspect was very positive, and I think it's still vital and important for us to continue with the pro clubs and them helping develop our talent and our players going forward. So it's got a number of different aspects, a number of different ways to look at the position and the job, and again. You do all that work for a year, year and a half, and you put all that work in just for one tournament and hoping that the team peaks at that one particular moment. So that's also the real challenging part, is to get the team peaking and playing at their best for that one particular moment in that tournament.
Paul, it's refreshing to see a former Canadian player involved at the CSA level, be it coaching or elsewhere. We see Jason DeVos now, of course, involved away from the actual on-field work as well. Is that a resource that the CSA needs to use more of, do you think, former players who understand Canadian soccer more than perhaps the average person?
I would like to think so. I think there is not needing to be necessarily in terms of football, but there is an advantage, I would say. There's definitely, when you've played at that level and you've experienced I can relate to these boys, especially having played at the 17s, the 20s, the Olympic, and the senior team. So you know exactly where they're coming from. Even though well over 20 years ago, you still remember those moments, and you know exactly what's going on kind of in their heads. And I don't think you can replicate that unless you've really been there. You can experience that as a coach, but obviously you would never have been able to know exactly what's going on in these kids' heads had you not done that yourself. So there are advantages to it, and I think it would be a great thing to see more and more Canadian, former Canadian players that have represented the country internationally and have had successful careers to be able to come back and give back to the sport and to the youth. I think that it is a major advantage being able to do that, and I think hopefully we see more and more boys, more and more of the former boys coming back and being able to put themselves in that position to do that.
Paul, obviously during your pro career, you had a great deal of success in the Bundesliga and the Premier League with some pretty big clubs. But before then, I mean, you cut your teeth with the Toronto Lynx locally, and that was, I can only assume, a key part of your development as a player. I'm sure you know that the Canadian Premier League is going to launch soon. I'm just interested to hear your thoughts on that and what role you see that the league playing in terms of giving opportunities to Canadian players and developing players in this country.
Yeah, no doubt. I think if you look at us, I think I really feel that the country has a good grasp on our grassroots level of football. I'm experiencing that with my kids right now. I do think the direction we're going at that level from 6 to 12 years old is a good direction. It's the right direction. I mean, it's no hidden secrets anymore. The world of football is very similar. Countries all over the world are doing very similar things that we're doing here. And I think, you know, now that we have the academies and hopefully more and more professional clubs coming up with the Canadian League as well, I think the key is the 13, 14-year-olds. They're getting the right environment to play in. And then I think once they get to that 16, 17-year-old level right now where you see our boys that just came back from qualifying, I think the next big step is have a place for these kids to play. And I think that's been their major gap in the year in Canadian history, was that we don't have a place for these players at 17, 18, 19, 20-year-olds to play, because they don't necessarily are not totally good enough or ready physically or whatnot to make a step into a first-team MLS team at that age. But there still needs to be a place for these guys and these players to develop, and that we don't lose these talented individuals for lack of games. Because in the moment, I think that still remains our biggest gap in filling these players in not only in a place to play, but playing in meaningful games week in and week out, and experiencing what it is to play proper matches. And I think if that gap gets filled, then we'll, you know, that pool of players that represents senior teams and first team football clubs will increase tremendously. And not only, you know, our gap in our pool of players will not only increase from 30 or 40 in the first team, but 80 or 90 to 100 in the senior team. And that needs to, if we can fill that little gap, and it's not easy, but if we can and put these players playing at a high level in those critical ages, then I think we're ticking on all our boxes and going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Paul, listen, I got to ask you, Tottenham Hotspur, your former club, you spent a couple of really good years there. They're leaving White Hart Lane this season. I'm sure you have a bit of an affinity to that old stadium. Any emotion seeing the final games there?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it still remains, even before I got there and obviously playing there, one of my favorite stadiums in English football, and also in any of the stadiums I was fortunately enough to play in. And there were some real big famous ones that I was able to take part in matches. But I think White Hart Lane was one of the top in my list in terms of that great traditional old English stadium where there wasn't a bad seat in the house, and very close proximity to the pitch. When the place got rocking, there wasn't any louder than that. So, in one sense, a little bit sad to see that stadium to go. But you also look at the positive, and you look at the benefit of the new stadium coming in, and you see the work being done on that. As well as, you know, there's some good signs there and some real positive things to look at as well. And also, it's obviously that stadium being it'll be gone, but it at least it's somewhat on the same piece of land. It's not completely different. It's not like moving the club's moving the entire ground or to a new location. I think that the big advantage they've been able to do is almost. Is pretty much keep that same ground going, just obviously with a brand new renovated stadium. So good to see, but also a little bit sad in terms of losing that, you know, that real good old traditional English stadium that there isn't very many left in English football anymore.
Paul, before we let you go, just wanted to ask in terms of your own personal future, what's where is that at? Have you are you going to stay on as U17 coach? Have you talked to Octavio Zambrano yet? What lies ahead for you personally?
At the moment, we'll sit down and we'll review not only the last qualifying campaign in Panama, we'll review last year and a half, and go from there. Sit down with him in due time and decide exactly the next step, the next route in terms of myself and what role is to be exactly determined in the next little bit, I would imagine.
Well, like I said, I think we need more former players involved at this level of football in this country. So good luck with that, Paul. Thank you so much, mate. Really enjoyed this.
Okay, cheers, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Paul.
That is Paul Stolterry. One of Canada's great players. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
If you look at, let's be honest, there's not that many great players in the history of Canadian soccer, and I'm not, that's not me being aloof here, but
no.
he had a really good career internationally and, across Europe. Werder Bremen, 7 years there, won a league with Werder Bremen in the Bundesliga, went to Spurs, did well there, played at Fulham for a bit, and then ended his career back in Germany in Borussia Mönchengladbach. Also one of the best killer stares in soccer, right?
Intensity
about him, huh?
Yeah, I remember, was it the game against the U.S. where they got burned on that call in the Gold Cup, and he just shot darts into the referee.
I think that was using some promo material. Yeah, I remember that one. It's like eyes just bulging, just destroying that poor referee.
Yes, but a great servant for the Canadian national team. Over 80 caps, and one of the types of players who, I don't ever recall him ever being wishy-washy about representing Canada. He was always there, answered the call. And I'm sure at times to the detriment of his professional career playing in Europe. But, like so many before him, took great pride in representing Canada and was, a longstanding servant for the Canadian national team.
Won a Gold Cup?
Did.
As well.
Yeah.
So has some silverware. Not many guys in this country can say that.
No, not too many.
And like I mentioned, I really believe we need more of these guys involved. Just over the years, there's been a lack of these players involved post-playing career.
Right.
The CSAs, whether it's their fault or the individual's fault, I don't know. But, from what I understand, in the past, the CSA hasn't been open to bringing these guys back. This Gold Cup team, right? They won a championship.
Right.
They were very good players. It was a very good team. And so few of them are even involved in the game.
Right.
Out of that group.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Well, like I said, and it's encouraging that they are starting to do this. And, obviously Jason DeVos is involved with the development program there, and Paul's involved with the under-17s. It's interesting because I remember bringing this up. I ran into Dwayne De Rosario on the street one time last year, and I asked him the specific question. I was like, are you doing anything with the CSA? Have they kind of reached out to you? Because you're a veteran player, and it would be kind of cool if they kind of picked your brain.
About goal scoring.
Sorry?
Knows a thing or two about goal scoring.
Knows a few things about goal scoring. So, I just thought it would be like a natural thing, but he suggested, that they hadn't reached out and that there wasn't much appetite on the CSA's part. So,
others, where Nick Dazovich is doing, good work in Vancouver right now.
Right.
With Academy football.
Right. He seems but like
why,
another one.
Why isn't he involved, the professional level?
I don't know.
He actually did a really good job with TFC for that short stint.
For the short stint he had, yeah. And I always thought he had great promise.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's the strangest thing, isn't it?
That's a question that I should probably pose to the CSA now that I think about it. But, I think it is. It's looks like it's getting a little bit better, but I think that still has some sort of way to go to getting, these people involved because, they can bring something to the table, right? They know a lot about the program. They've lived it. And I think, the CSA could benefit from what they have to say.
Yeah, 100% agree with that. All right, we should move on to some other action this past week at Champions League. Did you watch any of that, Jamie?
I didn't watch a single second.
Mention right now he's wearing his David Trezeguet Juve shirt with pride. Just two stars I see above the crest there. Will there be three by the end of the month? Or I guess the beginning of next month?
Well, the stars represent... I think there will be...
Is that a Champions League show or is that the Serie A show?
No, this is a Serie A show.
Oh, okay, so two stars, 20?
Yeah. Okay. So this was like
old
shirt.
How many Champions League has or European Cups has Juve got?
Two.
It is two. Okay,
that's why I was confused. So I guess it could represent that too. But I think it'll be three by the end of this season because I honestly think, and my bias aside, I think they're the odds-on favorite to win. They're just, I've just been so impressed by Juventus, what they've played from start to finish in this Champions League campaign. And, I said to you off air, when the draw was made, I really didn't care who they played because I didn't fear Monaco or Real Madrid or Atletico Madrid. It didn't interest me in the least. I just thought whoever they're going to play, they're going to smack around. So
they bounced back from losing Paul Pogba pretty well this season, haven't they?
Yeah.
All said and done. They're a better team actually for it. They spend the money. Pjanic comes in. It's been pretty good. I wouldn't say it's been a huge success just yet.
No.
But pretty decent. Depth. Yeah. And then the young players, Dybala, and then just getting better and better every single every single game, it seems.
Yeah.
Throwing the spine, which is what's making this team what it is.
Right.
I mean, the term professional performance yesterday has been used, and that's precisely what it was against Monaco.
They manage games. I mean, look, it was their sixth straight Champions League shutout. They've played 11 Champions League games this year, and they have 9 clean sheets.
Including 2 against Barcelona.
Yeah, and they've shut out Barcelona over 2 legs, and they've only conceded twice. So that's pretty damn good. But the thing is, too, they're not sort of like the stereotypical defensive Italian team. They can score, right? They play some football. Gonzalo Higuain yesterday, both goals were really well taken. And Dani Alves, the balls that he's applied on both.
Are you surprised how good Alves has been this year? You're not surprised?
No, I thought
it may have been washed up.
No, I thought it was a mistake when Barcelona let him go for free, and then we picked him up. And I just thought, you know, this guy is going to be a real asset for Juventus, and so it's proven to be.
Well, a smart coaching too. He might not be a fullback anymore.
Right.
So who cares? Stick him further
forward. Play him as a wingback, yeah.
He's incredible.
Yeah. The thing is, too, I mean, this is like when you look at the Juventus team that was in the Champions League final a couple of years ago against Barcelona, I think this team might even be better. And that team featured, you know, at Tevez and Pogba and Andrea Pirlo, and they've lost those guys, right? But you know, Juventus kind of goes out and they bring in guys like Alves, and they took a gamble and bring him in, I guess, to a certain extent, because there was that belief that he was done, but he's proven to be a great signing, and they showed great ambition in splashing big cash on Gonzalo Higuain, and what a great game he had yesterday. So Juventus just shows this ability to sort of reinvent itself, I think, over time, and that's what we're seeing now.
Now, it looks as if they'll be playing Real Madrid in the final. Yep. Real smacked Atletico 3-0. Cristiano Ronaldo, I mean, we've probably mentioned his name more than any name on this podcast over the years. I don't know what you say about that guy.
I thought he was washed up.
I thought he's we discussed the potential decline, and then he's reinventing himself is what he's doing. Yeah. He's a center forward. And, I mean, who else do you want in the box right now in world football, in the box, than Cristiano Ronaldo?
No, no one else I'd want.
No. Simple. He may not beat a guy one-on-one like he once did down the left wing, you know, but he's just, you know, and I think it may have taken a couple of years for him to really kind of get that in his head that, okay, I had to reinvent myself. And maybe it took Zidane, you know, a guy that he reveres,
yeah,
you know, as a player to convince him. Perhaps previous coaches tried it and he's like, no, who the hell are you, Rafa?
Right.
You know, who are you? Maybe Zidane, it took him to convince him that this is what you need to do. And when he says he can play till he's 40, who doubt him at this point? I mean, he's a freak of nature physically. And simplifying his game a little bit like he's done, I wouldn't put it past him to play till he's, you know, late 30s anyway. 40, who knows?
Sure. Yeah, I think it really depends on how long he wants to play for and, you know, where he wants to play. And but yeah, I mean, what a fantastic player. And, you know, predictions of his demise have been grossly exaggerated. That, you know, the last 2 games that he's played in the Champions League, he has hat tricks and he's just been lights out. So it's, he's been in very, very good form lately.
That being said, I still think Bonucci and Chiellini would have him in his pocket, in their pocket.
I would think so. I mean, you know,
taking nothing against.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
They can handle him.
But I mean, like, they've only, you know, nine shutouts out of 11 games. They've only been conceded twice. So, I mean, and, you know, it's not like they played chumps either. I mean, they had Sevilla in the group stage. Mm-hmm. They had to play Porto. And then I'm trying to think who they beat in the previous. Oh, yeah, Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Yeah, shutting out, you know, Neymar and Messi and Luis Suarez for 180 minutes. So, and, you know, now they shut down Mbappe and Falcao for 90 minutes in Monaco. Yeah, I mean, you know, Juventus is pretty damn hard team to beat down.
Juve Real final would be just what this tournament's designed for as well.
I think so.
Perfect,
yeah.
Wouldn't it?
It'd
be great. But they're not there yet, in fairness, and let's not rule out Monaco just yet, although we are kind of...
Going back to Turin, needing 3 goals? Well, good luck with that.
Yeah. Premier League weekend, we're ticking down the final couple of 2 or 3 weeks of the season. There isn't that much drama left, really. I mean, listen, first place is still, I guess, up for grabs. So the way Chelsea have refound their footing, I don't see them slipping up. Spurs have been obviously wonderful. The race for fourth place could be really interesting. A big one this weekend on Sportsnet 1, I believe it is, and Sportsnet 1 on Sunday. It's Manchester United against Arsenal. Now, for both teams, I would say Arsenal especially, any hope of the top four, this is a must-win game. I think they're probably done in the race for the top four. United are saying that might well rest players because Europa League semi-finals, of which will be going in about an hour from now.
right,
an hour and a half from now, so we can't comment on that, obviously. It's a huge match, though, for both teams. And given the injury concerns for United, I wouldn't blame Jose Mourinho for resting players in this one, would you?
No, not really. I think, as you said, the Europa League is a big consideration, just because if they win that tournament, then they're in the Champions League next year. So that might actually be their best route to the tournament.
But don't rule out Celta Vigo.
No, and it's interesting you say that, because we've got a piece on Sportsnet.ca right now just sort of explaining why they shouldn't underestimate Celta Vigo, because they've been giant slayers, with recent wins over Barcelona and Real Madrid. So, it's a tricky tie. Like you said, kind of like a must-win game for Arsenal, because I think they're out of the top four. I don't think they're going to do it at this point, but if they drop 3 points on Sunday, then that's it. Like, it's definitely over.
Wenger said he tried to sign Mbappe last year, went to his home, in fact. He was out of contract.
Really?
In the end, Mbappe decided to stay at Monaco. Turned out pretty well for him. But how many players has Wenger come out and said, I tried to sign this player? Pretty much every single player.
Yeah, well.
I've got a friend of mine who's a huge Arsenal fan. And every week he comes out with some superstar player who at some point trialed at Arsenal, according to him. Or some superstar player that Arsene Wenger spoke to and almost signed. We could have got Ronaldo, you know. We could have got Messi, you know. We could have got Zidane, you know. Right. You could have got Luis Figo, you know. Well, you didn't, did you?
Right.
But it's quite funny. He's disturbed. He's blinded.
Mbappe wouldn't be the worst signing in the world.
Be a pretty good signing.
Yeah. Someone you could build around for, 10 years potentially.
Yeah, I think there might be a couple of other teams in that.
A few. I have to say, he, for the first half anyway, the second half he faded and he didn't do much. But the first half he really kind of asked serious questions of Juventus' defense. So clearly a talented player who has a very bright future. Wouldn't surprise me if a bidding war erupts this summer.
Is he the most revered player right now, do you think, in world football, given his age?
The most revered?
As far as most sought after, put it that way.
I think so, yeah. Kind of like Pogba was kind of last year after, everything that was going on there. I think, absolutely. I think Mbappe is. I think he's really kind of broken out this season. And as I said, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if there's a massive bidding war this summer for his services. So Monaco, expect them to cash in.
Yep, some pretty big named strikers on the move this summer, I think. Griezmann, of course, probably on the move.
Yeah,
as
another
well.
One. Yeah.
Now, once again, the Costa to China rumors are out there once again.
Right.
Saying it's a done deal, £75 million in China, you'll make about it's about $1 billion you're making a week. Seriously, it's 650. Sorry, not a bit.
Not a billion.
Forgive me. A million. We're not far off a billion.
Yeah,
wouldn't surprise me.
Exactly.
A million a week.
Right.
Because it's £650,000 a week is apparently what they're offering, which is the highest pay player in the world.
Right. Crazy.
Man, the first $1 billion a week player isn't that far off.
Yeah.
I think it's on its way.
They need soccer writers over there?
I've said that before. Broadcasters happy to move to China just for a year or two.
Yeah, I'll try it. Yeah, if you want to throw some of that big money my way, I'll try it for a year.
All these mercenaries over there right now. My God, Jackson Martinez.
Yeah,
Hulk. Axel Witsel. These guys are mercenaries because they played in some parts of the world where, let's be honest, they are not welcome. It's been horrible. They've experienced some terrible racism in Russia. But they went there for lots of money, and now they've, in their prime, have gone to the Chinese Super League. Hey, I don't blame them.
God bless them.
I don't blame them at all. Like I said, if some broadcaster wants to pay me, 30 times my salary,
sure,
might consider it.
Yeah.
Might consider it.
I'm sure you would.
For a year or two.
Yeah.
Convince a wife. She'll miss me, though.
Yeah. Probably get some good Chinese food while you're over there.
It's just called food there, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, just food. TFC last night.
Yeah.
You were there, I was there. Good performance. Not a great game, but what a big win.
Massive.
Orlando, who were top team in the league, right? Entering the
Were 6-1-0, best team in the league going into the game. So, yeah, big win. Not the prettiest or most convincing victory, but it was what it was, and it's important, I think, sometimes to win games like that where you have to grind it out. And it was probably more comfortable than it should have been, because at 2-0, I just felt they kind of took their eye off the gas pedal a little bit, and they could have really put, the hammer down and finished them off. And Greg Vanney kind of talked about that after the game, where, he felt the team still has to learn how to put away teams when they have them down by the scruff of the neck. So
If not for Alex Bono, it could have been 2-2. Yeah, what a save that was.
But I don't know. Did you see? So for listeners who didn't see the game, I mean, Alex Bono made this fantastic save, kind of recovery save, swatting the ball just before it crossed the goal line, denying Kyle Larin of a clear goal. But I don't know if you've seen the replays. Don't you think Larin could have? He was
tried.
He was pretty casual about that. Do you
pretty
not think?
Casual. He was being too harsh? Cigarette in one hand, a scotch in the other hand.
It seemed like you just thought, oh, well, this is like...
Is in.
You know, I just thought, like, if he had just shown a little bit more urgency, he could have absolutely buried that.
Yeah.
I'm not mistaking it, right?
100% correct.
Okay.
I mean, it was a great save. It's a brave save.
Absolutely. Take nothing away.
But if that was Kaká in that position,
he would have pounced.
He would have pounced. Precisely. Yeah. That's what he would have pounced.
Right.
And Bono, Larin didn't pounce. He's still learned that, perhaps. He's had a great start to the season, Kyle Larin. Fantastic start to the season. But maybe that's, don't take anything for granted. Goals are so hard to come by in any league.
Right.
You got to take advantage when the opportunity presents itself. And that was
on a play for him. He should have, like, as I said, just absolutely buried it. But it just seemed like he was far too casual about it.
So. Yeah, 100%. All right, Jamo. So as mentioned, the Prem on Sportsnet this weekend. We have Leicester, Watford. Leicester, it was this week last season that they won and clinched the championship.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The Vardy party was this week.
Oh, right. Yeah, because they had to watch, right? Because
Chelsea Spurs.
That
big Spurs meltdown, remember? All the red cars, the eye gouging and the decapitation and stuff. And they lost the points and Leicester clinched while watching it in Jamie Vardy's kitchen.
That's right.
Great video. Still some of the best video you'll ever see in sport was that Vardy party.
Wow, a year ago, eh?
A year ago, yeah.
Wow, how times change.
Back to normal. Back to normal. Although Leicester can actually jump into the top half of the table this weekend.
Wow.
And I think if you told most of their fans, you know, you'd finish top half.
They'd take that.
Yep, okay. It's been a weird year for
them. And a solid Champions League run, so
yep.
They'd take that.
We have Leicester, Watford. We have Swansea against Everton. Swansea obviously fighting for their very lives. Haller playing against Sunderland, so they'll probably get 3 points there, you'd think.
Yeah.
So it's a big game for Swansea. And then Sunday we have Liverpool, Southampton, Sportsnet World, and Arsenal United on Sportsnet World. And I think it's Sportsnet One, could be Sportsnet. I think it depends on what happens in some of the hockey and basketball situations. Mm-hmm. But check out sportsnet.ca for the program schedule. So a big weekend as we wind down the season.
We should, not that we're prone to plug stuff, but we should mentioned to listeners that we're both part of Footy Talks.
Yes, we should actually, yeah.
On May 24th at the Rivoli, which is, well, you explain it, James, because you know more about it than I do.
Yeah, essentially it's a panel discussion about all things soccer. There's going to be
it's like a speaker series.
A bunch of us, speaker series, yeah, essentially. A bunch of us, various panels, jump down there. I think it's $15 a ticket. The bar will be open, so you can shake my hand and buy me a beer.
Yes.
And J-Mo a beer. He's more of a Manhattan kind of guy, though.
So. No, I'm a beer guy.
I know you're a beer drinker.
If you go to my Twitter page, at John Molinaro, there's like a tweet pinned at the top where it has like the full details. And if you use the promo code Molinaro, you got $5 off tickets.
Well, and...
And you can use that to buy me a beer.
Yep, that's... How do you pin tweets on your...
Show you.
Yeah, show me. Yeah. That's new to me. I should do the same thing. Smart. But yeah, Footy Talks in Toronto, May 24th. If it's successful, there will be others, I imagine.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool venture. So when they asked me, I was pleased to do it. So
yep, you may have heard of Pitch Talks, which is baseball. You may have heard of Puck Talks, hockey. It's been around for a couple of years.
They've done
now.
Basketball ones too, I think.
Yeah, I think they have. Like yeah, it's a really good company. And yeah.
So this is the first kind of soccer
first one ever.
Yeah, so
we made the cut first time around.
Who knows? You notice my name is higher than yours.
I know. I'm right at the bottom there.
You're dead last.
That's where I like to be. No. So check it out on JMO's Twitter page and my Twitter page at James Sharman at John Molinaro. All right, I guess we're done. Our thanks to Paul Stoltieri for joining us today. Our thanks to Eric Prime behind the glass. JMO, thank you.
No worries.
Hope you enjoyed that. Chat later.